Morning. Oh boy, I am nervous today. I barely even slept last night. I didn't fall asleep until like 3 because I just couldn't fall asleep. And I got up at like 6:30 and I was just like, I just couldn't sleep because I'm nervous because this is my first day doing communion. So I've never even handed out communion, and now I'm giving, like I'm like the guy who's running the thing. Because normally the only people can hand out communion are elders, and I've never been an elder. I've always been an unordained pastor, and unordained pastors aren't allowed to touch the communion, right? And then, but now I'm like kind of this weird ordained elder pastor, so now I can do it, and it's very nerve-wracking. And anyway, so if something goes wrong, if like, you know, I drink the bread and I eat the wine, or I don't know, something goes wrong, I apologize. And if the sermon completely bleh, I'll blame it on that. Yeah, so Father's Day, that's really great. I get 2, because in Canada, it's on a different day. So good job, Canada. Good job, New Zealand, for having a different day. And this is what Rosanna did for me this morning. So Charlotte, she cooked me this, I like bacon, so she cooked me this bacon. And she like spent extra time on it to make it nice and crispy. I like it crispy. It's as unhealthy as possible is how I like my bacon, right? And okay, so Charlotte then goes take a, she takes a shower, and I come out. And whenever Rosanna's doing something wrong, she always says, Daddy, can you go to your room, right? Which is my office. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? And she was hiding something in her hands. And I said, well, what's in your hands? And it was bacon. But I didn't know Charlotte had cooked me this bacon. It was supposed to be a surprise, right? And so I was like, oh, why are you hiding the bacon? And she's like, mommy gave it to me. Right? And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. Why are you hiding? I just couldn't figure it out. And then anyway, finally Charlotte comes out and she's going to make me this bacon thing. And she's like, where's the bacon? And I was like, oh, didn't you give it to Rosanna? She's like, no. Yeah, Rosanna got in trouble then. She lied. And she ate my pieces. On Father's Day. Right, yeah. So, yeah, okay. Kids are great, though. If you don't have them, get them. Yeah. Preferably in a legitimate way. Okay, so we're starting a new series. Yay! Right, so new series called The Story. And it begins with a question. What is the meaning of life? You know, maybe you've been wondering, what's this all about? You know, how can I find happiness? How can I find what my purpose in life is? Maybe you've been feeling empty lately. Maybe you've been a little down. Maybe you've been hungering for something more than what life has offered you so far. You know, and it happens to all of us eventually, that nagging suspicion, right, that our dreams aren't running on the same track as our reality. Right, so I remember a few weeks ago I talked about when I was in school how I was like a big geek, right? You know, I got beat up all the time and all that. Well, that's only true to a certain extent. It's true all up until year nine. And the way school works where I'm from, it's elementary, K to 6, kindergarten to grade 6, then junior high, grade 7 to grade 9, and then high school, grade 10 to grade 12, and then you go to university. And the money fell. Right, so I'm in, so I was on the bottom end of things up to grade 9, like really bottom. Like, I was in the library club. I was really popular in the library club, you know. And, you know, in reality, there's more geeks than popular people, so in a weird sense, I was actually the most popular person in school because I was very popular in the library club. But anyway, I was a geek. I got beat up. I was never invited to any of the cool things. It was just bad. But I had this friend, okay, his name was Donald, and he was like, I've had it. I don't want to be a geek anymore. I've had it. Right, so what he did was is he bought a whole new wardrobe. I still to this day, I don't know where he got the money. Something tells me he probably got it in a nefarious way, but whatever. So he got a whole new set of clothing. He got rid of his glasses, making him virtually blind, but he didn't care. He got rid of his glasses. He worked out. He joined the football team. He joined the rugby team. He joined drama. He did all these things, and he became like the most popular person in our 2,000 number high school. Like, everyone knew Donald, and he was my best friend, right? So I was still kind of geeky, but I was his friend, right? So then all of a sudden, I became very popular, and I spent all 3 years of my high school life being, you know, like you see in the you know, American TV shows, the popular person, right? You know, at all the parties, having all the girls, all the sorts of stuff. It was pretty good, you know, especially when you come from like crap to like top. It was quite. I just have to be honest. I did enjoy it. Okay, so that was 3 years of that, and life was pretty good. You know, I was pretty happy. But then I went to Quebec, and I was in Quebec, which is like the most hedonistic place on the planet. If your kid wants to go to McGill University, which is a top class university, Ivy League, Harvard level, if they say they want to go to McGill, stop them. It's not good, you won't get your child back. Anyway, so I'm in Quebec, and I'm just doing the thing all university students do. You know, you enjoy life, have fun, party, you know, girl, all the whole nine yards. But to a certain extent, and this is going on my fifth year of doing stuff like this, and I just started to think, really? What am I doing with my life? Like, where am I going? Like, what? If I were to die right now, what could I say I've accomplished? Like, I ate food, and I went to Quebec, which the more I think about it, isn't that remarkable. So I started to get a little empty, and I started to really think about the big questions, right? It forced me to really think about the big questions. And I'll never forget asking, you know, the silent heavens out there, right? Why the answers to the big questions of life seem so elusive. How come it's so hard to answer this question? People have been trying to answer this question for millennia, right? You know, and what I want to do with this series is I want to say that the answer to that question, surprisingly, might just be on the dustiest part of your bookshelf. You know, and the real ironic thing is I think the answer is logged in some sort of book on the dustiest part of your bookshelf, right? And I think it's there. You know, it's funny. If I told you that if you want the answer to the secret of life, and it's in India, near the Taj Mahal, right? And if I told you that, how many of you would save up money, buy a plane ticket, and go to India to see this the answer? If I told you it's there, right? Many people would travel the whole world. You see all these movie stars, they go all over the world to all these cool places because they want to find some extra meaning to their lives, and they're willing to go everywhere. And here I am, I'm going to say that I think the answer can be found in the dustiest part of your bookshelf. And I'm sure many of you can probably guess which book I'm talking about. Which book? What do you think? Lord of the Rings! Yes, Marty Bing! Good thing you're an elder at this church. Right. No, that is wrong. Good book, though. Recommend it. The Bible. The Bible. Don't let me hold you in suspense. Yeah, James is like, whoa! Yes. Right. But why look in the Bible, okay? That old, boring book, you know? And I know you may be thinking that the Bible is the last place anyone would want to look for new answers. The Bible is dusty and old. I imagine it's probably got quite a few dust bunnies on some of your guys' Bibles. Can something written that long ago mean anything to someone today with computers and cell phones and Facebook and Twitter and the United States? Like, can it apply to us at all? And you know what? I think it can. I think it can turn your life around. But before we go any further, I just want to tell you what this series is and isn't. So I'm going through the story of the Bible. I'm going to go systematically through the narrative of the Bible. What I'm not going to do is I'm not going to try to prove you that God exists, that he created the world, that miracles really do happen, or that everything in the Bible is completely true. Those are very interesting questions. Those are very important questions. I'm very happy to talk to you at any time about those questions, but that's not what this series is about. This series is just going to be talking about the story. The story, face value, just what is the story? You know, did this happen? Did that happen? Is it really this? Is that a metaphor? Blah, blah, blah. Those are good questions. That's not going to be discussed in this series. So if you're sitting and I'm talking about Adam and Eve and you're like, was there even an Adam and Eve? I don't know. That's a good question, but I'm not going to talk about that in this series. But if you want to talk about that, call me. Yes. Okay. So, and we've done other series already to kind of talk about the trustworthiness of the Bible and all that sort of stuff. But if you want to talk more, you want to do a Bible study on it, I'm available whenever you are, hopefully. Okay, so what I want to do is tell you the Bible story and introduce to you what the Bible has to say about your life on this earth, right? Now we live in an age that many people call postmodern, okay? Postmodern, so post-modernity, you know, a little more relativistic. What's true for you is true for you, what's true for me is true for, you know, that sort of mentality. And one of the first postmodern novels ever written is a terrific source for understanding why we need something like the Bible if we're going to make sense of our own journey. The story goes something like this. These are some of the opening lines. Maybe you know them. When Arthur Dent from the West Country region of England plunked himself down in the mud in front of the yellow bulldozer that was about to demolish his house, he had no idea how useless his gesture was going to be, because in exactly 12 minutes, planet Earth would be blasted to bits to make way for an alien hyperspatial express route. Anyone know what book? Yeah? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Who's here read that book? Okay, so those are the Christians. I read it when I was very young, and it's funny, like, it's kind of like C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. You read it as young, but you don't really know it's like promoting Christianity and all that sort of stuff. Well, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is, you know, kind of promotes like a sort of a nihilistic, kind of atheistic, kind of depressing kind of world. But you never notice it. You never know that until you actually talk to Douglas Adams and what his purpose. But anyways, regardless of that, funny books, excellent books, I recommend them. And unfortunately, I'm going to wreck a little bit of it here. Your fault, they were written like 30 years ago. Right, so, in this story, Arthur, there's this guy, the main character Arthur, he has this extraterrestrial friend, he has this alien friend named Ford Prefect, okay, horrible name, and he eventually learns that millions and millions of years ago, a computer had been set in motion to find the answer to the great question of life, the universe, and everything. Have you heard of that phrase before? What is the answer to life, the universe, and everything, right? These books discuss that, right? So 7.5 million years later, so they build this computer, and it takes 7.5 million years, and it does that for 7.5 million years, trying to find out what the answer to the life, the universe, and everything is, right? So the people that they're asking, okay, you've come to the answer. What is the answer? And he's like, you're not going to like it. They're like, no, just tell us the answer. He's like, you're not going to like it. Please, just tell us the answer. I warned you. And he says, the answer to the great question of life, the universe, and everything is 42. Say that again. 42. What? 42? After all of this time, we were waiting for 7.5 million years, and the best that the universe's greatest computer can come up with is 42. It made no sense at all. Of course it didn't, the computer informed them. How could it? The answer was definitely 42, no question. It's definitely 42. But the problem was is the seekers hadn't formulated the right question. When they identified the question, the answer would make sense. So they built another computer to find the question. And they called that computer Earth. So in these books, Earth is a giant computer. Now, I won't give away the West, but the point is simply this. And as you know, right at the beginning of the book, the Earth is destroyed. And what you learn is the Earth is destroyed 5 minutes before it gets the question. So I won't give away the rest, though. It's a long series, 5 books. But the point is simply this. For many of us, the quest for the meaning of life seems doomed to a lot of wasted time. And even if we come to a solution, it seems it makes no sense when we find it. It's depressing, don't you think? That's kind of like the postmodern dilemma. It all seems so pointless. Amusing, sure. I suspect that you may realize that searching for the meaning of life is probably the toughest, most interesting thing and biggest challenge you could ever face. You know, we live in a world in which both meaning and truth have fallen on hard times. It's not that the truth might not be out there somewhere. Anyone remember The X-Files? Remember that show? What was it? The truth is out there, right? But they don't really ever find it, kind of, at all. I don't know. I didn't watch that latest movie. I heard it was horrible. Maybe they found it there. I don't know. But it's out there, but we just can't get at it. Many people, for example, believe that the best way to come up with answers for them is just for themselves to create their own spirituality. You know, just do their own thing. Just, you know, if we're thinking beings, even spiritual beings, why would we be content with buying into someone else's explanation for things? Why should we accept their version instead of our own version? If no way of thinking or even of worshiping is better than any other, why not just go with our own beliefs? You know, everywhere there are gurus calling us to walk this way or walk that way or walk like an Egyptian or whatever, right? But who knows what's valid and what's not? Better to just trust our own instincts. Not to be tied down to anyone else's belief system could actually be a good thing, right? There's a special kind of freedom, right? Being liberated from other people's creeds so you can forge new paths and locate your view of the world and the things that you find most important. But making your own spirituality does bring its challenges, does bring its struggles. Sure, there are guidebooks you can buy to help you on your journey, but who knows if they'll make sense or even work. Even when you finally come up with an explanation that you can use, there will always be that nagging fear that you're missing something, that the real answer is still out there somewhere, and your life will be greatly diminished if you miss it. And there's always that troubling question, why am I here anyway? There's a question. The real question. The answer to it, according to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is 42, which makes no sense. Why am I here? 42. See the problem? Maybe we're on the wrong track then, believing that a computer built by mere human beings could find the ultimate answer. Maybe the answer isn't 42 or any other solution we could think of with our own limited minds. Even if we pooled all our consciousness together, maybe we still wouldn't have the explanation for our existence. And I don't think it's accurate to say, as The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy does, that we have a solution without a question. I think we do know what the question is. It's, why am I here? Which means, am I just some accident of history? Am I just an accident? Or is the fact that I'm living, breathing person mean something that is important in a grander scheme of things? Am I an accident? Or is there a purpose to my life? Am I significant? Or am I just a speck of dust on a speck of dust in a cloud of dust in a bigger cloud of dust that will eventually... Is there reason to believe I have value? Or am I just a higher form of a cow. You know, we eat cows. Why? You know, you see the what's the greatest some of the greatest sci-fi stories is when aliens who are like even like more smart than us, they come to Earth and they see humans and they're like, ha ha ha, humans. Remember V? Not the new one, but the old one in the 80s when I was like 3 and it scared the living daylights out of me, where these people are like, rah! And they're like lizard things and they're eating people. It's crazy. You know, you're 5 and anyway. Right? I don't know what the new V was like. Was there lizards in the new V? Anyone watch that show? I heard it was horrible. But anyway, doesn't matter. Right? Aliens come, they just eat us because they're more powerful than us. You know, is that just it? We're just on one little spectrum and there's no importance to our lives, and if someone who thinks we look like really good cows, it'd be totally cool for them to eat us at their, you know, McAlien Donald's or something, right? So do I have value? And if you're getting tired of the uncertainty because no one can verify that any of the spiritualities out there, or maybe the one you've made for yourself, can answer your deepest question, may I humbly suggest that you go back to something that is possibly sitting on your shelf somewhere in your own home. I don't know where you are with the Bible. Maybe you believe most of what it says, but you would like to have a fresh look at its message. Maybe you just think it's a pack of nonsense, but you feel like you owe it to yourself to have somebody explain the nonsense before you dismiss it forever. Maybe you just don't know what to think. Let me hand you an invitation. If you listen on over the coming weeks, I'll take you into the world of the Bible. Not into trappings of churches and theologies and rules that make you feel like a degenerate soul, but with the message as is expressed right on the printed page. I'll try not to bore you. I'll let you see the words of the Bible as I discuss them so you can decide whether it's saying what I claim it's saying. And if you come with me on this journey, we'll agree on one thing. You don't have to believe any of it if you don't want to. I'll take you through what it says, and you can make up your own mind. No pressure. Bottom line, I think it's possible to show you the meaning of life, and it's not 42. Buy into what I'm telling you? Great. If not, at least you had a chance to look at this ancient book and decide it's not for you. Now, maybe you're asking, why didn't I choose some other old scripture like the Quran or the Upanishads? And it's not because I want to reject anybody else's faith, but because I found something in the Bible that I can't find anywhere else. A voice that comes from the outside. A voice that speaks words that help me understand my life. Tired of do-it-yourself everything? Take a walk with me through a book that didn't come from either you or me. You'll likely find the journey interesting and the payoff could be fabulous. And at this point, you might be saying to yourself, well, why waste my time looking for the meaning of life when there's likely nothing out there to find? Instead of listening to you, I could be doing any number of things to enjoy what I already have. 2 points. First, just think about what that question just said. Why waste my time looking for the meaning of life when there's likely nothing out there to find? I'll say the question again. Think about what it's really saying. Why waste my time looking for the meaning of life when there's likely nothing out there to find? Really want to say your life is meaningless, that there's nothing out there, that there is no meaning? That has got to be one of the dumbest things you could ever say, especially if you've never bothered to really look. And second, what could be more enjoyable than going on a journey to discover the meaning of life? What could be more interesting? What could be a more interesting question than what is the meaning of life? Oh, will the All Blacks defeat the Argentine. Oh, no, that's not a more interesting question. It's an interesting question, sure. But not the most interesting question you could possibly think of. Why am I here? I believe the Bible holds the key to that most interesting question of why am I here? So if answering the meaning of life sounds interesting to you, I encourage you to come next week and beyond, and I promise the journey will be fascinating. You could even discover the meaning of your life. Lord God, I thank you for today. Thank you for bringing us here, Lord, and I pray that we all here, whether we're Christian or non-Christian or seeker or non-seeker, Lord, I just pray that we would all think about this question. Why are we here? What have you put us here on earth for, Lord? And I pray, hopefully, as a pastor, that those here who don't call in your name would find you and Jesus incredibly fascinating and interesting. And I would also hope that those here who do call themselves Christians would just be utterly enraptured and fascinated by the story that is contained in your holy word. And so I pray that you would guide this series, that you would guide this church, and you would guide everyone here as we all go on a journey to discuss and learn what is the meaning of our lives. Pray this in your heavenly name. Amen.